Good morning. Every so often, you read one of these scripture readings, and it's just like, it's a little bit hard to know where to come in on it. Today we have to talk about the tree of life with its roots above and its branches below and the Garden of Eden, and I have about 22 minutes. So I can always take the option which is given to me, which is to pretend I didn't hear the scripture reading and just go some other direction entirely, and then afterwards say, oh, gee, I just don't know, I forgot. But the other side of it is, each of these points of view presented by the Bible, presented by the Bhagavad Gita, are all pieces of this bazillion-piece jigsaw puzzle that we're given to work on. You know, when little children have jigsaw puzzles, they'll have three or four pieces, and it'll be such a great thing for them. They'll put all three pieces together, and they'll get so excited, and you'll tell them how fabulously they're doing, and then you graduate to 10 pieces or 100 pieces or 1,000 pieces, and then you get a 1,000-piece puzzle that's nothing but blue sky, and people just really love working on it. Some people love working on it. But really, life itself is this bazillion-piece jigsaw puzzle. And it really pretty much is just plain blue sky. But there's hints. There's hints all the way through it. In our Festival of Light, there's a point where after we tell the bird's whole saga and how the little bird, those of you who will hear it for the first time, you'll hear it in a few minutes, the whole saga of this little bird and how he struggles to do things his own way and crashes and burns and a pretty grisly fashion, even though it's Sunday and it's church, so we do it in a gentle manner, but really he goes down hard. And even though he's pummeled repeatedly, he follows what I guess people define as the law of insanity, which is to do the same thing over and over again and hope for a different result. And then gradually it just dawns on him that maybe I'm just approaching this in a completely backwards way. And so he say, you know, there's this cry that goes out. Everything that I thought of was real turns out to be false. Everything I thought that was light turns out to be dark. What is the meaning of life? Why am I here? Where do I find happiness? I mean, we do it in a very genteel way, you'll see. It's very poetic like this. But what we're really describing is something that's really messy, which I'm sure all of you have been through. Those long, agonizing days and nights where we've absolutely done our best, we thought we did our best, and nothing worked out at all. And it just falls apart, and we ask Divine Mother, even if we don't know who we're asking. There's a beautiful song that we sing sometimes, Mother, all thy children call thee, knowing not it's you they call. And so it is in our own hearts. We have these moments of just complete bewilderment. And we cry out desperately without even knowing to whom we're speaking. And we don't even know that there is a who to speak to. Often it's just the being that lostness in our own minds. And it's not always dramatic. In my own spiritual life, my state of almost suicidal desperation, as I would describe it using words, was actually very calm. I never even got depressed. I just, inside, there was this constant voice that was saying, is this it? I was 19, 20, 21 years old. You know, I was not a child anymore. I was on my own. I was working. I was supporting myself. I had my own life. And yet, I kept thinking, if I have to just get up and go to work and then come home and go to bed and get up and go to work, and then on Saturday, you know, play with my friends and buy groceries so that I can go to work on Monday. It's just like, is this all? And so in the Festival of Light, that question is asked. And then the answer, the line in the festival is, ever and again, through your awakened sons, the answer comes. And it's just such a profound statement, ever and again through your awakened sons. And what are the awakened sons? Well, Jesus used that phrase a great deal, didn't he? The sons of God, he said. I am the son of God. It's been grossly misinterpreted, But what is really meant by that is that we are the offspring of divinity. Jesus spoke at a time when fathers and sons were the dominating force, so he spoke that way. But we are the offspring of divinity. Think of what that really, really means. You know, there's this all of this influence of Darwin, Darwinism, that we just, so many false ideas we don't ever realize are false because they're just the way people think. So there's this huge thought of evolution, that we are really that we are really just animals that just happen to be a little more powerful than the other animals. But really, we look backwards to our essential nature. We look back to the monkeys, we look back to this one and that one, whatever it might be. And to think from the opposite end, that we are, in fact, pure light, pure gold. We are offsprings of the freedom of infinity that just came down and clothed itself in this little ray. We're not escaping from the monkeys. We have descended from the divine. We're offspring of the divinity. And so here we are. And Jesus spoke that way, and Yogananda even spoke more intimately. Jesus was able to speak of the Father, but Yogananda spoke of the Mother. And the reason he shifted to the Mother is because this is a time and place when what people want is they want to be able to have that spiritual relationship that really belongs entirely to them. That's just my own. That doesn't depend on the church that I go to, the dogmas that I follow, or somebody else doing this or that. Last night, we had an auction to raise money to finish our school building, and we were selling lots of blessed objects, and one of the things we sold was, well, Swami Kriyananda's coming to visit if you have a Kriya Mala and you want him to bless it. You know, we sold the right to have your mala blessed by Swami, and I was thinking back to the Catholic Church, and for another $30, we'll get your uncle out of purgatory. You know, it's like, it was one of the great scandals that really led to the Protestant Reformation. It was the church needed money, so they just started selling things they had no right to sell. You know, they didn't even know if your uncle was in purgatory. They had just declared it, and your $30 or whatever it was wouldn't get him out. Yogananda said, if sins could be forgiven, he said, overeat and then go to the priest and see if he can solve your tummy ache. He said, if he can't, he can't forgive any of your other sins either. Yogananda was not a respecter of false teachings. You know, but what he came to show us is all of that, let's just give it the benefit of the doubt. Let's say it was well-meaning at one point. But it's not the spirit of the times. This is Dwapara Yuga. This is a new age. This is a time when energy is rising as the defining reality, and consciousness is close behind it. And we're not so attached to the form of things, and we're not so persuaded that the mere form of things is going to give us what we want. You know, this profound and inescapable doubt has come into everyone's consciousness about all these dogmas that used to be so persuasively true, and even people who want to believe have difficulty believing in these rigid structures. And of course, there's the counterwave of the people who are just gripping with white-knuckled determination, you know, the security of all those forms. And what we see is this incredible clash in the middle, because we're shifting. But what Master Yogananda wanted us to know is that this divinity is within us. We don't have to ask anyone's permission. The only person we can blame, if we're going to blame, which is not such a good idea, but the only person we can hold responsible for our knowing or not knowing it is ourselves. That's why we use this word realization. It's really a very wonderful word, realization. Because realization says that it was always there and we just didn't know it. Isn't that a comforting thought? It was always there and we just didn't know it. We just have to realize that it's true. Yogananda says we're all self-realized. We just have to improve our knowing of it. Because the mere fact that we walk around in total ignorance doesn't make us less the offspring of divinity. It just means that we get to suffer. That's all. We get to, you know, there you have it. You get to cling, we cling to our limitations, and the reward for that is that we get to keep them. You know, that Divine Mother, if we call to her in a false way, there's nothing she can do for us. If we demand of reality that reality be something other than it is just because I want it to be that way. The human ego is just so charming in that respect. But I want it to be different. This child, this little boy of 3 years old once in the ashram in San Francisco, he just crawled out of his crib at 4 a.m. He was totally bored. He stood in the hallway and shouted into the house, "I want it to be morning!" Just like that. "I'm ready to play. Where is everyone?" You know? And isn't that so with us? We say, "I would like, Lord, to have this and this and this and this." And then after I get those things, I may not work for them. I may not have the talent for them. They may not actually be good for me, but I want them all to make me happy. And then we write it all out mentally in this contract, you know, and then we sign it with a flourish, and then we wonder why the universe pays no attention to us. But we have to follow the ways that ever and again the awakened sons bring to us. And the author of Genesis, I mean, Genesis didn't just appear out of nothing. Some enlightened son of God wrote that out, trying to give us a clue. Because there's this other reality to this, which is by its very nature, and now I'm going to refer to the tree in the Garden of Eden. I was thinking here for a while we would never get back to it, but we are. The tree in the Garden of Eden, right there in the book of Genesis, was some exceedingly enlightened being's attempt to give us a clue. And in the time and place that he wrote it, and you know, Master talks about all these things at great length, in less enlightened ages, the truths had to be given more symbolically. In more enlightened ages, the truths can be given more directly. That's one of the reasons that Master incarnated at this time, because it's a time when truth can be spoken more directly. But whoever wrote the book of Genesis had to hint at these things, had to hint by these allegories that there is this paradise, this paradise that lies within us, and that we, and this is the story of Adam and Eve, can either live in harmony with that paradise, or we can act in such a way that we are exiled from that paradise. And believe me, we're not being punished for what good old Adam and Eve did. I mean, what kind of a God would do that to you? Oh, your great, 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 great ancestors were really stupid, and therefore you shall bear the burden of their stupidity. No, we bear the burden of our own stupidity. We don't need their stupidity. We have plenty of our own. But God planted in our own beings in the nervous system. This is the picture of the tree with the roots of the hair being the roots. That's why some yogis grow their hair very long, because it draws all this energy in. Others wear their hair very short or even shave their heads to interiorize the energy. You can go both directions on it. Or the yogis grow their hair for 12 years and then they shave their heads, and so they get both sides of the equation. But the point is, and they're hinting at the concept of a tree with its branches, because if one begins to meditate deeply on that as a symbol, you begin to see the reality. And even more deeply, if with inward vision, through the power of meditation, you begin to perceive the reality behind the material world, you see this river of energy, which is the kundalini. You see these branching lights, which are the chakras. You see the rays of light emanating from the crown chakra, from the spiritual eye. And you see, oh, there it is, there's the tree. And they call it the tree of life, because when you look at it, when you see it, when you feel it, you see that this is really the source of our being. And this is the process of spiritual life, is that we gradually become more aware. The word awareness is a marvelous, just simple word, because that's what spiritual life is about. We think that we're just flat material beings living in this flat material world. I don't mean that the earth is flat, although they used to think that. Flat in the sense of doesn't have much fizz. But even our reading today says many people think that the interior world is going to be much duller than the exterior world, because the exterior world is really fun, isn't it? And we can't deny that it is. And in what we have to understand and what Master speaks of all the time is everything that you enjoy becomes more rather than less. So we get this idea that, well, this world is pleasurable, and oh, I have to be a spiritual person. And the complete misunderstanding of the life of Jesus has just pounded that into our subconscious, because, you know, Jesus, at the end, to show his total transcendence of all limitation, basically walked with his own strength, by his own will, into that which human beings fear the most. You know, to be humiliated, to be imprisoned, to be tortured, to be killed in a horrible way. I mean, let's make a list of everything that really scares us, okay? I mean, we're a little nervous about, you know, going to the party in the wrong dress, but it doesn't really compare to the thought of being humiliated, tortured, you know, imprisoned. These just dreadful things that happened to Jesus. It was not a very enlightened age, and he needed to make a lesson that people would notice. And so he went through all that. But all through it, he went through it with absolutely undaunted courage and no indication of any of the normal human anxieties. Even when they came to arrest him at the Garden of Gethsemane, they came like that, and all his disciples were terrified behind him. And Jesus says to this armed guard that's broken in on his meditations, he says, "Who are you looking for?" "Jesus of Nazareth." And they tell the story in the Bible. And Jesus stepped forward and said, "I am he. I am the one you are looking for." It was, you know, the enlightened ones don't write encyclopedias, because it's not a question of hammering out every little point. It's a question of just making a tiny little crack in the veil of Maya, so that if you put your eye really close to it, you see the infinity beyond. So here's Jesus, and he knows what's coming. You know, this has been building for a really long time. He's been fighting, he's been baiting them, actually. He's been baiting all these powerful people, mocking them, calling them hypocrites, calling them fools, and in public places, making them look like they don't know anything compared to his power. He's been raising the dead. He's been curing the sick. He's just been making a mockery out of them. And finally, that power comes. Of course, he has divine sight to know. All his disciples cower behind him, and what does he? He calls out that, "I am the one, and here I am, take me." And even one of his disciples, Peter, just gets, you know, he pulls out a sword and he starts to fight. I mean, what would he think? Isn't that how we would respond? Something comes to us, it looks frightening to us, it looks like it's going to take away everything we want, we struggle against it. Jesus casts him aside, "Sheathe thy sword." This is not how we will respond. And then he just embraces it completely. Pontius Pilate wants to help him be freed. Pilate has been warned, this is the backstory, by his wife, who's had a dream about Jesus. And she tells her husband, because Pontius Pilate now is the one who's going to decide whether Jesus is going to be crucified or released. She says, "Do not be responsible for the death of that man. You know, extricate yourself from this in any way that you can." She fears for him. And so he tries, and Jesus is just totally uncooperative. I mean, Pontius Pilate is trying to give him a free ticket out of this mess. Jesus either refuses even to answer him, or gives him answers that have nothing to do with, "Oh, please let me get out of this." Finally, he says, "Don't you know that even now my Father would send legions of angels to free me? But this is God's will that this should happen." And then he goes to his death. And he's on the cross, and again, here's another hint. You know, there's three people being crucified, and they want to hasten the death of these people because the Sabbath is coming. They don't want this mess during the Sabbath, and it's the Passover even more. So they take action. They break the legs of the two others so that you suffocate. I don't want to go into the gruesome details, but it makes a difference. But they come to Jesus. Turns out to be not necessary because Jesus is already gone. Now you see, he didn't have to wait until the normal course of things took their time and he died. It was just, he spoke a certain number of things. He saw his mother standing at the base of the cross with the disciple whom Jesus loved. This is John, who wrote the gospel. And Jesus says to the son, to John, he says, John, behold your mother, meaning that now you must look, you must take care of her. And he says to his mother, behold your son. This is his last responsibility because he was leaving her. And from that time, that disciple took Mary into his home and treated her like his own mother. And then he said a few other things, and then Jesus said, it is finished. And then he gave up the ghost, as they say. He passed away of his own free will. Now, if in the midst of all of that he could choose to enter, be in or out of his body, how could he be bound by anything? This is what he's trying to say to us. Ever and again, through your awakened sons, the answer comes. And then, of course, afterwards, he resurrects. And he doesn't resurrect in a big flash of light or anything. His disciples are gathered in this room together. And suddenly there was Jesus in the midst of them. Just like that. Peace be unto you, he says. It's like all of this that we're so anxious about all the time. And that's the message of Jesus. The message of Jesus was not, oh, how he suffered and how we have to suffer like him, and oh, we must always be grateful for suffering and take on more suffering ourselves. That doesn't mean we don't do what we can to help, even at great cost to ourselves. But the answer to all of it is joy. The answer is not this great burden that life is to us. Ever and again, through your awakened sons, this answer comes. And it's because we are the offspring of divinity, that the tree of life is our own nature. And this gradual movement of spiritual consciousness is really from this apparent huge external reality to an ever-growing awareness that it's just a shadow compared to what is inside of us. We discover that through all of these teachings of these awakened sons. And there comes a point in our lives where we become disciples. We become disciples of a master if we're fortunate enough to feel that we have found one that we can follow. Or we at least become disciples of life, of true life, of understanding that there is this reality. There's a pathway that others have walked for us. These awakened sons have heard our cry, Mother, all thy children call you. Knowing not, it's you they call. And so she comes. She comes and just whispers in our ears, even that beautiful little thing that Steve wrote, where Master, in that book of prayers, Whispers from Eternity, he takes every little tiny thing that we see in the world around us and he turns it into a divine symbol. This, and what Steve was reading, I will be the tiny dewdrop slipping off the lily pad, not to lose myself, but to expand myself into the great infinity. It's just so dear, isn't it? Isn't it so much more in every way what we're seeking than this sort of dry, sophisticated worldliness that passes for wisdom? You know, be therefore as little children, for if such is the kingdom of God. That's the great message of the Masters, this absolute bliss of surrender. Master said so clearly and so sweetly, it doesn't matter what happens to us in life. The only thing that matters is what we become through it. Sweeter, kinder, more humble, more open, more filled with that bliss, more aware of the fact that we are offspring of divinity.